this is a very different demographic. They're middle class and upper middle class and wealthy Mexicans, highly educated. And they actually didn't come to the United States illegally. They came with documents. They came with border crossing cards, or they came on tourist visas, but they were forced to overstay their visas. So they're now living in the United States without documents because of organized crime and violence in their communities, and because of a wave of kidnappings and extortions that are occurring. It's not safe for them to come to go home, so they're staying here in the United States.
Tell us a little bit more about those circumstances that is causing this group to come and then overstay their visas, allow them to be here legally. This is a change in the circumstances in Mexico. What is happening that's causing this group to come?
It's a relatively new phenomenon, and it's rapidly evolving as we speak. But when in 2006, when Mexico's president Felipe Calderón launched a military operation against the drug cartels, instead of beating them into submission, what happened is that they became more aggressive, more brutal, and they branched out into other avenues of crime, such as kidnapping, extortion, human trafficking. So they sort of morphed from drug trafficking organizations into organized criminal syndicates. So along the northern border of Mexico, you know, this is our border with Mexico, the states of Tamaulipas, Nuevo León. We're talking about, you know, right across from Brownsville, McAllen. Those areas are especially hard hit by organized crime. And it's become so pervasive that really the federal government in Mexico doesn't have control over those areas, meaning they don't have control over the rule of law or even the tax collection. The organized criminal syndicates have taken that over.
Is there something specific about that geographic area that has made it more susceptible to this particular kind of extended activity by the drug cartels?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very highly lucrative smuggling corridor. All the territory along the Rio Grande and along the U.S. border is highly sought after by organized crime because of its proximity to the U.S. and because of our huge drug market here. I mean, we're talking about, you know, between $40 billion to $80 billion coming from the United States in illegal drug money every year to organized crime syndicates in Mexico.
Give us an example of a family or someone who fits this description, this phenomenon.
Sure. I mean, right now, if you go to San Antonio or Houston, you know, the Woodlands or the gated communities in San Antonio, there are a lot of wealthy and educated Mexican families living there because of this, because of organized crime in Mexico. And basically, they're here until things get better. They're waiting for things to get better in Mexico. So one family that I talked to is actually in Brownsville, and they're from Matamoros. They were upper middle class family. They owned a factory. They were highly educated, had a very nice house, had, you know, a maid and everything. And the husband was kidnapped, and the criminals wanted $800,000, which they didn't have. So what's happening to many families, especially in Tamaulipas, is if they don't have the money to pay the kidnappers, then they end up taking their house, their business, their properties. It's a very pervasive kind of criminal syndicate. I mean, they have lawyers, they have notaries. What happened to this family is basically they lost everything. They had to give up the deed to their home as collateral so that the husband could be released to raise money to give to the kidnappers. And in the end, he was rescued by a military convoy. But when they went to the district attorney in Mexico to give his statement on what had happened, they said, well, there's nothing we can do to protect you, so maybe you're better off in the United States. So they fled to Brownsville, and they've been there now for 2 years, and they lost everything in Mexico. And this is not actually an uncommon story. If you talk to lots of people from Mexico who are now in the U.S. that have been, you know, upper middle class, educated, they either know somebody who's been kidnapped, or somebody in their family's been kidnapped. So it's a fairly common phenomenon.
Is there a sense of numbers of how many people have come to the U.S. from Mexico in these kinds of circumstances?
That's really hard to quantify. It's mostly anecdotal because Mexico doesn't track how many people have left because of the violence. One number that is out there is that 230,000 people have left, half of them to the U.S. If you ask mayors in different cities in Texas, like the Julian Castro, the mayor in San Antonio, says he thinks about 50,000 Mexicans have come and to live in San Antonio. And along the border, you know, mayors will tell you sort of anecdotally how many people they think have come because of the violence. But there's not been any sort of official number.
What is the impact of this particular population coming into Texas? Is it doing anything to the cities where these people are coming? I mean, what dynamic is that bringing to the state?
Well, it's actually really helped the border communities on the U.S. side because a lot of people have come on investor visas, which is one of the only ways really that Mexicans can come who are being threatened by organized crime legally to stay in this country is through an investor's visa.
And just briefly, what is an investor's visa? How would someone go about getting one of those?
Well, an investor's visa, there are different classes of them. What a lot of people are trying to get right now, you would have to invest $500,000 in rural areas or areas where there's high unemployment like the border. And then if you go further into the interior of the country, it becomes $1 million. And so we're talking about people who have a good amount of money. And if they invest between $500,000, $1 million or more in a business, they have to be able to create 10 jobs for U.S. citizens. And once they've done that, they and their families will get a legal permanent resident visa. And then in 5 years, they can apply for U.S. citizenship. But there's a difficulty there in proving, you know, that you've created 10 jobs. And so the process is not that simple to get an investor's visa, but that's what a lot of people are trying to do right now.
Well, and what about the option of political asylum? Does the U.S. grant that for many people trying to come from Mexico to the U.S.?
Well, this whole phenomenon of organized crime taking over government institutions in Mexico is fairly new, and it's rapidly evolving. As I said, so our asylum law was designed back in the 80s for people escaping, you know, the Cold War authoritarian regimes in Eastern Europe and so forth. And it wasn't designed for people who were fleeing organized crime. So what's happening is Mexicans are being denied. I think last year we had more than 3,200 Mexicans apply for asylum, but only 49 were accepted. So that's only 1.5% of Mexicans last year were accepted for political asylum. And what a lot of people are telling me, lawyers who handle these cases and people who are fleeing the violence in Mexico, is that they really do want to go back to Mexico. They just can't guarantee the government can't guarantee their safety right now. So what a lot of lawyers would like to see is some sort of temporary asylum that might last like 2 or 3 years or some sort of temporary protected status. The problem is that neither Mexico nor the United States are really acknowledging that this class of refugees exists, that there are people here in this situation because the Mexican government can't guarantee their safety. It's a very delicate diplomatic situation. The U.S. doesn't want to say, you know, admit that Mexico cannot protect its citizens in some parts of the country. So it's a bit of a sticky situation. And in the meantime, we have, you know, thousands of people who are sort of stuck in limbo, like this family that I write about in my story, who are here illegally because they can't go back to where they're from because they might be kidnapped again or they might be killed or, you know, there's just no guarantee for their safety.
So for families such as the one that you interviewed for this story, what is their future? I mean, are they just literally waiting for things to change in Mexico? Or what is the outlook for this group?
Well, that's the thing. They're hoping for some sort of political solution in Mexico. The family that I profile in my story are in a pretty dire situation. I mean, they both have advanced degrees, but they can't work here in this country. So they've been living off of money from friends and family, off of loans, and they really don't know what they can do. I mean, they would like to, you know, have some U.S. company sponsor work visas for them, but in a economic recession, it's hard to get any American company to sponsor foreign nationals for a visa. So they're really in a tough situation without any kind of temporary protected status. They're just kind of living in the shadows in the U.S. trying to figure out what to do next.
Melissa Del Bosque is a reporter with the Texas Observer. And Melissa, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.